If you're in your Bibles, we're in the book of Judges. If you're in the story, we're in chapter 8 for the program that we're working on. But we're going to be looking at the overall story of the book of Judges today. And you might know a couple names out of the Judges. You might know about Gideon, or you might know about Samson, the strong man. But probably other than that, we don't know a whole lot. So we're going to unpack these stories today. All right. But before we do, quality joke. All right. We ready? All right. After some intense prayer. Was that a negative about my jokes? This little guy is in a coffee shop and he's sitting there drinking his coffee, and this huge guy comes in and just pops him upside the head and he says, "Judo chop Japan." And the dude's laying on the floor going, what did I do? The next day, little guy comes in, sits down, he's drinking his coffee. Same big guy comes in, pops him on the head. The guy says, "Karate chop, Korea." Little guy's laying on the floor. Third day, the little guy doesn't show up. Big guy comes in, he sits down. About a half hour later, the little guy comes in. Wham! Big guy's laying on the floor, unconscious. He looks up at the guy behind the counter and he said, "When he comes to, tell him tire iron sears." See, your negative attitude at the beginning was unfounded. Unfounded. All right. That is the book of Judges. Has anybody, God ever had to hit any of you in the back of the head? All right. Yeah, I got so many spots back here, I can't remember exactly which ones or from what. But that's really what the book of Judges is. It is God constantly warning us about the dangers of falling away from Him. And it's a picture. The book of Judges happens over a 300-year span. It happens from about 1250 to 950 B.C., okay? So it's after Joshua's time, and it's before we get to the kings, which we'll be looking at, King Saul, King David, King Solomon. But there's a 300-year period where there's no leadership in Israel. And here's what happened. Last week, when we finished, we went through Joshua, and we talked about Joshua being a great leader. Joshua was the successor of Moses. Yeah. In fact, everywhere Moses went, you see Joshua close by. Moses is inside the tent praying to God. Joshua's outside the tent learning how to pray. So when Moses dies, leadership gets transferred to Joshua. But one of the saddest verses in the Bible we talked about last week is in the 24th chapter of Joshua, when it says that after Joshua and his generation died, the people turned away from God. Joshua's mistake, he did not train a leader. Now, there's a lesson right there. If you're in business, if you're teaching a class, if you're doing some kind of ministry for the Lord, you should never do it by yourself. You should always be developing somebody else so that it can either double in size, or we can plant something else, or do another group, or we develop some of these young people in a band so we can start another church. That's how the system's supposed to work. But Joshua doesn't train anybody. And so it tells us early on in the book of Joshua, chapter 2, that our book of Judges, after Joshua and his generation dies, everything goes into chaos. Now, God is going to raise up some people called judges. And that's just mayor, governor might be a word that you would use there. But there's a bunch of them. Their names are listed. Sometimes there's one sentence about them. Sometimes there's some big stories about them. But they're trying to bring order to this mess that's going on. Because once Israel turned their back on God, here's what happens. They're walking with God. This is where we're at with Joshua. And then somebody says, "You know, this is not so bad. We could do this, and we could worship that, and we could get involved in this type of lifestyle, and we could do this." And pretty soon they're totally cut off from God. And then another nation would rise up and conquer them. And they would be enslaved to another country. And there's four or five different countries mentioned in the story. The Ammonites and the Midianites and the Assyrians, the Phoenicians, the Assyrians. there's all these people throughout these 300 years that conquer them. Well, once they get conquered, they finally wake up and they'll say, this is terrible, and they cry out to God. And when they cry out to God, God sends a deliverer. And each time he raises up a new judge. And things go really well while that judge is there leading them to follow God. And then as soon it'll say, that judge died. And then the next sentence will say, and then Israel turned their back on God again. And they walk away from God, and another group conquers them. And then after 20 or 30 years of misery, they cry out to God again. And then God saves them again. Seven times that cycle plays out in the book of Judges. Seven times in 300 years. Does that sound like any country you know? Does it sound like any person you know? See, that's the struggle. You and I live in that cycle. I'm with God, and then I drift a little bit. Oh, it's not that bad. And then one day you wake up and you're like, whoa, how did I get here? This is not what I believe. This is not who I am. This is not what I think. How did I get here? It started with one or two bad decisions. And then you found yourself captive. Oh, it's captive to an addiction, captive to a lifestyle, captive to some sin that's got you tied up, and you stay there until you finally can't take it anymore, and then you say, God, please deliver me. And if you don't get anything else out of this message, get this. Every time God's people turn back to him, he's there. Every time. The question is just how much suffering do you want to put yourself through? And how much suffering do you want to put your children and grandchildren through? Because that's the tragic part of the story, that as the cycle goes, people are not passing it on to the next generation, and we keep having to start over the same problem. Now, I'll just give you a few of the stories, okay? There's a story in chapter 3 about a judge named Ehud, E-H-U-D. In fact, I know a guy named Cord Bear who preaches a sermon called Who the Crud Was Ehud? All right, so it's a masterpiece. You should get that one sometime. But it's very good. And it's about a judge that God raised up. There's an evil king named Eglon who is persecuting the Israeli people. And Ehud gets a meeting with this king, and he gets into the meeting. They frisk him, but everybody wears swords on their left side because everybody's right-handed. So they frisk him, he gets in, but Ehud's left-handed. And so Ehud whips out his sword from this side and runs it through King Eglon. It's a beautiful story to tell your children before they go to bed. All right. In fact, the book of Judges is just a tremendous man's book. Blood, guts, gore, it's all there. Now, don't say to me, I can't believe God would let this happen. God's not letting anything happen. People are choosing it. All right. This is what happens when you come to the conclusion that you don't need God. In fact, the summation of the whole book, the verse we're really focusing on, is Judges 21:25, that says, in that day, in those days, there was no king in Israel. And so everybody did what they saw fit. Another translation said, everybody did what was right in their own eyes. So what happens when everybody thinks they're God? Well, you have absolute chaos. You have moral chaos, social chaos, governmental chaos, spiritual chaos. And that's exactly what happens every time we go through this cycle. In chapter 4, you read about a judge named Deborah. Now, that one might mess you up a little bit. So 3,000 years ago, God had a lady in charge. Right? There's something to ponder. For those of you that are wondering about women in ministry, 3,000 years ago, God had a lady in charge, and she was a great leader. She did an incredible job of getting the nation back to God, standing up to their oppressors, and it's just a great story, such a great victory, that the fifth chapter of Judges is devoted just to a song that she wrote, praising God for his faithfulness and for the courage that her people had to trust God. Then in chapter 6 to 9, you read about a guy named Gideon. You might know something about Gideon. Gideon was the guy that laid out the fleece and said, God, if you want me to do this, if you don't know, that's where the idea of putting out a fleece comes from. He said, if you want me to do this, make the sheepskin wet and the ground dry. So God does. And he said, maybe I misunderstood. So God, let me ask this again. Make the ground wet and the sheepskin dry. And God does it again. And he says, I don't want to be a leader. I'm an unlikely guy. I'm from the lowest unimportant tribe in all of Israel, and I'm a nothing even in that own tribe. And God said, no, Gideon, you are going to lead my people. God often uses people that are unqualified because God's far more concerned about the heart of who we are than about our talents and abilities. In fact, sometimes our talents and abilities actually are a hindrance because we think God can't make it without us, and God does pretty good without us. I don't know if you've noticed that. God's looking for people who are willing. So here's what happens in the story with Gideon. During Gideon's time, they've been attacked by the Midianites, the people from Saudi Arabia, and they're being systematically starved to death. And they worship, they're worshiping a god called Dagon. He's the fish god. And what happens in the middle of the night, God knocks Dagon over. He's a stone statue. God knocks him over and breaks him. And all the people are going to come and kill Gideon. And basically Gideon says, so your God's so great, why do you have to come defend him? Why can't he take care of himself? And then there's a great story about how God does the miraculous with Gideon, with just a handful of men against this powerful army, and how God wins the battle. But again, let me show you how this plays out. So at the end of the battle, God has given this incredible victory to Gideon and the people of Israel. And so they get together and they've collected all of the gold from the people that they conquered. All the gold earrings. And the camels were wearing gold. Read it for yourself. It's in chapter 8. So they get all the gold, and Gideon says, you know what? This will be a great way to remind our culture how faithful God is. So he takes all the gold and he melts it down and he makes a shirt of gold. You know what the next sentence says? And then the next generation worshipped the shirt. Look it up. That's what happens when you get your eyes off God. You begin to worship things that are not true. You're following things that are not of God. You get yourself away from the Word of God. You get involved in a lifestyle that you shouldn't be a part of. And all of a sudden you're like, where am I? And then you go through that system. I'm oppressed again. I cry out to God, and God's there again. And maybe the best story is the one of Samson. Samson is such an unlikely hero. There is not really a good thing said about Samson. We teach this story to our kids. How do I say this nicely? Samson slept with everything. I mean, I'm just shooting straight with you. If he didn't sleep with it, he killed it. All right? That's Samson in a nutshell. There's 4 or 5 chapters about him. In fact, such a story, you want to know how God uses unlikely people? Before Samson is born, it says the angel of the Lord came to Samson's mom and dad. Well, the angel of the Lord was Jesus. Jesus shows up to them, and they even said, what is your name? Because they were blown away by this. And the answer that they get back is, my name is too wonderful for you to even understand. Is there any question who they were talking to? So Samson grows up, becomes judge. You know the story. He's got long hair. He's big. He's got all kinds of power. He's got these big dreadlocks. I mean, that's basically how you would describe it. And he gets himself in trouble from the beginning of his life to the end of his life over women. That's his problem all along. But he's fighting the Philistines. And there's all kinds of great stories in there about the battle that he does with the Philistines. Some of them are a bit crude, but again, it shows you the reality of what God is doing. But at the end of the story, he and Delilah get in trouble. He presumes a lot of things. He gets his hair cut off, which broke the vow with God. He loses his strength. This is a guy that says, picked up city gates and carried them outside of town. All right? Big, strong guy. But he loses all of his power. They poke his eyes out. They put him in jail. They humiliate him publicly. But at the end of his life, it says that he turned back to God, and Samson says, this was his prayer, God, give me strength just one more time so that I can do what you've called me to do. And it says that he put his arms on some pillars in a temple, pushed them out, and thousands of Philistines, the enemies of God, were killed. All right? You know that story, right? Okay. That's sort of the book of Judges. And there's all kinds of other stories mixed in there about the judges. But let me take you through this historically. This one's a little more difficult because the Israelites aren't building anything during this time. We're still pretty much traveling and fighting. All right, that's what's going on. But I want to show you just a couple things to show you that you can trust the book of Judges. All right, this is in the city of Jericho. Remember I told you last week Jericho's been built, destroyed, built, destroyed, built, destroyed. It's more than probably any other city in the world, and part of it's still there. This is King Eglon's palace. So when Ehud, who you don't know who the crud Ehud was yet, but when you read chapter 3, you will. All right. Corey, do you have a copy of that sermon they could get? Is it for sale somewhere? $10. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. But we know for a fact that this is the palace. So we know exactly where Ehud went in and killed this guy. All right. I hope that messes you up. It was intended to. Here's the next picture. This is of Mount Tabor, T-A-B-O-R. This is where Judges 4 and 5 take place. This is the story of Deborah. When Deborah is fighting, Deborah writes this song. She's working with another guy named Barak. And actually, the story happens down here. But here's what's significant about this. When Jesus goes up on the mountain and he prays, he's with Peter, James, and John. And it says that the Bible says he was transfigured in front of them, that he became like God. They actually saw him in his God status, not his human status. It happened right there on the same mountain. All right. Just to let you know. All right. That's a bonus. This is Dagon. I don't have a picture of the statue because God broke it. Yeah. So, but this is the fish god that they were worshiping, that Gideon's dealing with. And this is my favorite here. This is the last one. Okay. If you've ever seen a temple, you've seen pictures, maybe you've been there. If you've seen a Greek temple or a Roman temple, or if you've been to Washington, D.C., we ripped off all the architecture from ancient Greece and ancient Rome. That's what Washington, D.C. is. And if you've ever been there and you put your arms out, can you touch the columns? No, not even close. Because architecturally, you don't put them that close. They're further away. Even if you're a very large person, you're not even going to be able to touch them, let alone move them. But it says that when Samson died, Samson pushed on two pillars and the whole thing came down. Let me show you how cool God is. There's two Philistine temples we found. This is probably the one that Samson destroyed. Thousands of people are on the roof. Don't ask me why, but the Philistines designed their temples differently than every other culture. And for some reason, their architecturalists decided that how they would do it is that they would have two load-bearing timbers, and here and here. And instead of having them spread out, they're only 6 feet apart. They're the only culture in the world that did this. Maybe because it was really dumb. Okay? But this is how they built it. So that everything, the entire temple, rests on two pillars. So if you can take one of those out, the whole temple's coming down. It's the only place in the world, folks. And they're 6 feet apart. So if you've got a guy like Samson, maybe he's 6'8". 7 foot tall. I don't know how big he was. Certainly, he still needs muscle power to knock this thing down, but he certainly could have pushed it out. How about that for some thoughts? All right, let's get down to the core of this. The message is called "Oh No," because it's frightening how quickly we turn on God. And I don't think anybody gets up one day and says, "You know what? I'm just not going to be a Christian anymore." In fact, I talk to people all day, every day. That's not what they've said. I don't know. I just quit going. I quit reading the Bible. I quit serving, I stopped this, or, you know, some preacher made me mad, or whatever. But somewhere along, I'm still a Christian. But if you look at their life, man, they're in major drift. They're somewhere down where they're already sort of in captivity, and they're almost to that part where they're about to find out how bad things are going to get. But they still haven't gotten to the point yet where they cry out to God. So this whole book of Judges is a reminder of what happens when there's no authority. When you strip authority out of your life, and here's the problem. You think, and when you think about dangers in your life, you don't think about the fact that the worst thing for me is to not have authority. You think just the opposite. In fact, you want authority for everybody else, just not for you. Let me help you understand that. The speed limits. You need those. I don't need those, but you need those. Am I right? Stop signs. What a dumb thing. All right? You need those. I don't need those because I can tell what rules need to be followed and what don't. That's the danger when you get into a situation where there's no authority. You have chaos because everybody does what they think is right. And man, when you get into that spot, what a mess you're in. When there's no authority, whether there's no leadership in a government or in a church or in a business or in a school or whatever it is, when there's no leadership or the people are not obeying the rules of the land, you end up with utter chaos. And even though it sounds good, you see the danger of it. And that leads us to the second part of it. And that the second danger is then you come into an area where there's no moral authority. Let me show you how this plays out. For 40 years, you raise up generations and you tell them that there's no God. You tell them that they're just a product of evolution. You tell them that there's no higher power. There's really no rules. In fact, let's get those Ten Commandments out of here because that's going to just really mess kids up if they see things like that. And we can't have this. So then a 14-year-old kid walks into a school in Seattle and opens fire and everybody goes crazy. Let me ask you this. Why does it bother you? Why are you surprised? Why is it wrong? If there's no God, and if I'm following the philosophy that's been taught since the 1970s in this culture, why, that boy did what was right. Because he did what felt right for him. Now, that's insanity. But that's where we are, is it not? And it is a referendum on what's happening in our culture, but it's what happens inside of you and me. If you and I don't have that moral center, you see, you need the Ten Commandments. I'm not sure I need them. How long before a culture morally disintegrates? And then we sit around and wring our hands and say, we need more mental health counselors. No, we need to give people back to who really is the authority. And I don't know what this kid's pain was. I don't know. I'm not making light of this story, but I'm just telling you that if we continue to say, well, there's no really, you know, you're in charge of your own destiny. You've got to decide what's right and wrong. Well, this is what you get when you go down that road. So you and I have to decide if that's what you want for you. You have to decide if that's what you want for your children, for your grandchildren, because the decisions we make, what's going to influence them. And that leads us to the third part of this. I have 17 seconds. And that is the danger of my own authority. And this is the most dangerous of all, because if you think that you are really in charge, you look at our culture today and there's 7.5 billion people. If we all think we're God at the same time, do you see what happens? Everybody did what they thought was right in their own eyes. What a frightening place to be. So you and I, as Christ followers, have to come to the point, you know what? I don't want to be on the bottom of that curve today. I don't want to be in the spot anymore where I'm walking away from God, drifting away from God, where I'm cut off from God, where I'm oppressed by some sin in my life. I'm ready to call out to God, because the good news is every time God's people call out to God, where is He? He raises up somebody to deliver them. And that's ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. We started this message 8 weeks ago with the fact that for 6,000 years, since the time of Adam, God has been chasing us down to tell us that He loves us. He's been chasing us down to tell us, if we'll just turn back to Him, that He's there to forgive us.